What are your plans for Thanksgiving this week? Hopefully you all have some plans to be with others. Coordinating our plans took a little more effort this year, with family just spreading out in different directions more so than usual. We typically have a pretty good system of spending Thanksgiving Day with my family, and Emily's side of the family has always done something the day after or the weekend after, so it's worked out well. But this year was just a little bit different. And trying to figure out what we were going to do was a bit like playing a game of Tetris, where you see the pieces falling of all different shapes, and you're trying to figure out how they all might fit together nicely. We were trying to consider all the different pieces of the family puzzle, how to fit them neatly together, who has plans, who doesn't have plans, who could go here, who may be left out. But plans have all been finally lined up for our family. But in the process, it's got me thinking. It's nice to be invited somewhere, isn't it? The extreme introverts, aka the hermits in the room, may be thinking, no, I'd rather be home alone. We all have those moments for sure. But even being introverted doesn't mean that you don't value social interaction or that you don't want to be included. You may just prefer that social interaction in smaller quantities or in smaller groups. Still appreciate being included. When we're not invited somewhere and we'd like to be, that can certainly be discouraging, can't it? That's true whether it's a special occasion or if we're just in a season of feeling a little bit lonely and isolated. We become keenly aware of the value of hospitality in those situations at those times. How often, though, do we initiate that type of hospitality? How often do we initiate an invite to others? I thought this would be an appropriate topic today, given the welcome social. That certainly is an act of hospitality in and of itself. When is the last time you served as host or hostess? Or when was the last time you had someone over to your home? Someone who is not related to you, or someone other than the people you're comfortable hanging out around in your pajamas? This type of hospitality seems to be a dying art in our society. It just doesn't happen as often as it used to. Growing up, I can remember having a change of clothes in the trunk pretty much every Sabbath, because it was likely that we weren't heading back home by ourselves after church. More than likely, there was some type of activity that had been organized, or there were some friends who had invited us over to their home after church, or occasionally a family or two would be heading back to our house with us after services. But that just doesn't seem like the norm anymore. Today, we have many understandable reasons why that might be the case, reasons why maybe we're not as hospitable as in times past. For example, everyone is so spread out. Everyone is so far from one another. Or life is just so busy. Who has time to schedule and organize and plan for another thing? Who has time for hospitality? Or perhaps we're just exhausted from the rat race, exhausted from the week, and just don't have the energy to even consider entertaining others. Or perhaps it's for legitimate reasons, like our home just not being a good fit to host because of space or appearance or other factors. There are probably several other legitimate explanations for why the norms of hospitality have changed. And when I say that, I mean really in society as a whole, but I think you'd agree it's changed a bit in the church even over the decades. But the question I want to address today is, should hospitality be dead for Christians? It is a dying art in the world around us. Should it be dead for Christians? The definition of hospitality from a Bing search says, the friendly and generous reception and entertainment of guests, visitors, or strangers. the friendly and generous reception and entertainment of guests, visitors, or strangers. I've heard it said that hospitality is really just making people feel welcome. So certainly that can happen in many different contexts, not just in your own home, but even in the church, at services. We can be hospitable in our approach to others. We can make them feel welcome, draw them in. But is hospitality, in the typical sense that we might think of it, is that a practice that is just out of date? Or should it be on the radar of disciples of Jesus Christ? I want to look first at the scriptural mandate that we have for us in the Bible. The word hospitable occurs several times in Scripture in the New Testament. It's actually listed as a quality to look for in a bishop or an elder. We won't turn to these passages, but if you'd like to jot it down for reference, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2, as well as Titus chapter 1 and verse 8, both list hospitable as a quality that we should be looking for, or at least striving to develop in the life of one who's put in a position of a bishop, an overseer, or an elder in the church of God. Hospitable. But as we'll see today, it's not a quality that's only reserved for leadership. It's not a quality that should only be reserved for the ministry, or a deacon, or a deaconess, for that matter. Let's go, first of all, back to Romans chapter 12. So we begin to look at this topic today. Romans chapter 12. I hope by looking at this topic today, it won't be a guilt-inducing message, but rather a message that helps us to really appreciate the hospitality that may be extended to us in the coming week, perhaps on Thanksgiving Day. But that, yes, will also be a motivation for us to consider in our own lives, is this something that I need to give a little more time and attention to? Am I hospitable? Romans chapter 12, beginning in verse 9. Verse 9 says, "Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. In honor, giving preference to one another, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality." We have a list here of admonitions, of instructions that the Apostle Paul is inspired to record here for us as we're striving to be disciples of Jesus Christ, representatives of Jesus Christ. The beginning of the chapter talks about our reasonable service, which is to be a living sacrifice. A living sacrifice to God. That we are to present our bodies, our lives, as this type of living sacrifice. And in this passage, Paul gives us some ways to do that. One of them being hospitality. The Greek word here that's translated hospitality is the word philonexia. Philonexia. I'll just give you a couple simple definitions for this word in the original Greek. According to Thayer's Greek lexicon, it says philonexia is love to strangers, or hospitality. Love to strangers, hospitality. Strong's says this word means hospitableness. Well, there is a helpful definition for you. What's hospitality mean? Well, it's hospitableness, obviously. And then it says entertain strangers, or hospitality. So love to strangers, or entertaining strangers. It might seem like a pretty superficial topic. And all of the things that we could talk about in Scripture, and all of the advice and the encouragement and admonition that the Apostle Paul could give us about how to live a life of sacrifice to God. And yet he focuses on something like entertainment. He does. But what's interesting to me here is what's recorded for us is not just be hospitable. If you look back at verse 13, Rather, Paul encourages us to be given to hospitality. Given to hospitality. So let's do another little word study. What is that term there that's translated given to? What does that actually mean in the Greek? It's the term dioko. Dioko. According to Strong's, it means, I'm going to skip over all of those Greek letters and not try to pronounce those things. It means to flee, to pursue, whether literally or figuratively. By implication, it can mean to persecute, ensue, follow after, given to, suffer persecution, or press toward. Interesting, these different ways that this Greek word can be taken. Again, we'll look at one more source. Thayer's Greek Lexicon gives some more fleshed out definitions, we might say. And as with all cases when it comes to looking into the meaning of a Greek word or a Hebrew word, sometimes there are a variety of definitions and we have to consider the options before we can determine what is this really telling us? What does this really mean? So Thayer's says this. Definition number one, to make to run or flee, put to flight or drive away. You think that's what Paul's encouraging us to do here? Chase people off. Does that fit with the rest of the list? I don't think so. Definition number two, to run swiftly in order to catch a person or thing, to run after. And then under definition two, it also gives a couple further definitions. To press on, figuratively of one who is in a race, who runs swiftly to reach the goal, or to pursue in a hostile manner. Don't think that's the appropriate definition there. Definition number three, according to Thayer's, is in any way whatever to harass, trouble, or molest one. To be persecuted, to be mistreated, suffer persecution on account of something. Again, that doesn't fit with the list of be kindly affectionate to one another, in honor giving preference to one another, not lagging in diligence. Definition four, without the idea of hostility, to run after, follow after someone. And lastly, number five, metaphorically to pursue, to seek after eagerly, earnestly endeavor to acquire. Obviously, there's a wide variety here in these definitions, but in all of them, whether positive or negative, it includes the concept of running after, chasing down. Our takeaway from this word study shouldn't be, I'm going to relentlessly hound that person until they finally hang out with me. Please don't view that as a singles in the middle dating strategy. What we can learn from it, though, from the meaning of this term given to, is that we should be actively pursuing the chance to do what? Given to hospitality. We should be chasing it down, pursuing these opportunities to entertain strangers, to show love to strangers. Another facet of how we do this is recorded by the Apostle Peter back in 1 Peter chapter 4. We'll go back there. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 7. First Peter chapter 4, we'll begin in verse 7, where Peter writes, but the end of all things is at hand, therefore be serious and watchful in your prayers. And above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. And verse 9, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. Again, we need to look at the meaning of the word here that's translated, be hospitable. It's a very similar word. It's related. This one is philoxenos. Philoxenos. The first one was philonexia, philoxenos. So they have the same root in the word there. Thayer says this one means hospitable or generous to guests. So we add the concept of generosity. And Strong's, I find this interesting. It says, fond of guests, that is, hospitable. Given to or a lover of the use of hospitality. A lover of the use of hospitality. Fond of guests. Now, we might read something like that or hear something like that and say, really? Fond of guests? I mean, I'm just trying to get comfortable with the idea of kind of putting up with the concept. Okay, I need to be a little more hospitable. Fond of guests? A lover of the use of hospitality, yes. That's a step up from just being willing to have people over. Again, we see the scriptural mandate for Christians is to develop and continue in displaying this quality. But then Peter doesn't just leave it there. He doesn't just phrase it as simply as it's phrased in the lists of qualifications or qualities of an elder, just hospitable. He adds something in here. Let's read it again in verse 9. Be hospitable to one another without grumbling. Without grumbling. Those two words come from one Greek word again, so we're going to dive into another definition. Lots of word studies today involved in this message. The Greek term is gongousmos, which I just love saying that. That's why I decided to go ahead and include this definition. Gongousmos. I think that's probably going to become a common phrase in our house now. Since it means without grumbling, it's just going to be part of my parenting style now. Gongousmos. We'll see. And it'll be said to me as well. Thayer's says this term means a murmur, murmuring, or muttering, a secret debate, or a secret displeasure not openly avowed. I think that one is pretty profound. Definition 1B, a secret displeasure not openly avowed. So Peter tells us, be hospitable to one another without this secret displeasure, even if you're not showing it openly. Eliminate that secret grumbling in your heart about having to do this. Again, that's a step up from just going ahead and agreeing to complete a physical task. And consider it, who would really enjoy being invited over or invited out somewhere with others, only to have the host seem like they really regret their decision? You may have experienced that before. Hope not. I have. Perhaps one member of the host family warmly welcomes you, while another seems kind of annoyed or burdened, a little bit detached or uninterested. I can't believe my wife invited you guys over. Or that's the sense, maybe, that you can get. Hope you haven't experienced that. I can think of some particulars. I won't share the details. No one in this room, by the way. But it's not a pleasant experience when there's this tension in the air. This kind of passive aggressiveness about, okay, do you really want me to be here or not? Both members of the host family might entertain guests, but only one blended the act with the attitude that God desires. As we know, God is after the heart. His desire isn't to create a fun entertainer out of his people, a group of social butterflies who can just throw some really good parties. It's not what he's after. He's after the heart. What he desires is the heart that motivates one to be given to hospitality without grumbling. Without grumbling about it before the doorbell rings. It's interesting that we have this admonition recorded by Peter. Obviously, he's inspired to record it by God. But we have it recorded by Peter, who, if you think about it, didn't have the most spotless record when it came to his social life. You may remember, at one point in time, Paul actually chided Peter for refusing to eat with Gentiles. See, Peter was intimately involved in Gentiles being called into the church, being given the Holy Spirit for the first time in Acts chapter 10, this story of Peter and Cornelius. And after this happened, and Peter couldn't doubt or deny at all that God was beginning to work with Gentiles and give them his Holy Spirit, Peter spent time with them, And yet later, when the peer pressure was on from his Jewish comrades, he turned away from doing those types of things. After experiencing and witnessing firsthand that God was calling the Gentiles into his church, when the pressure to fit in was on, he reverted back to the customs and the prejudices of the culture around him and refused to eat with Gentiles. And Paul brought that to his attention and said, "This is wrong." It was something that Peter had to grow in and work on as a disciple of Christ. So that's why I find it interesting that Peter is the one inspired here to tell us, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. As he was working through some of those challenges of what had been brought to light, what he had been shown in his own life, like, you need to work on this, Peter. This isn't okay. Do you think as he was working through that, there might have been a little bit of grumbling along the way? God, I know I'm supposed to be hospitable to the Gentiles, but what are all these other people going to think? And does it have to be in public? I mean, obviously just speculating right now. But do you think there might have been some grumbling in that growth process? And yet Peter is the one inspired to record here that we should be striving for hospitality without a secret displeasure going on under the surface. It seems now, later in his life, Peter had learned from his past experience. He knew the importance of having not only an outward willingness to extend a hand of fellowship in this way, but also the purity of heart that was so important in the process. The purity of heart that was essential in order to be willing and eager to pursue, to chase down hospitality. Now, the definition of that first Greek word that we read, one part of the definition was to entertain strangers. And actually, that's exactly how the Greek word is translated in another passage back here in Hebrews 13. Let's go back to Hebrews 13 in verse 1. Hebrews chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. Verse 1 says, "Let brotherly love continue." In verse 2, "Do not forget to entertain strangers." Philoxenia, or philonexia, sorry. Mixed up the sounds there. Philonexia. "Do not forget to be hospitable. For by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels." Now, I have a lot of questions about this passage. It's a very curious passage to me. Incredible to think that when we're willing to extend hospitality even to strangers, to people we don't know very well, we could unwittingly entertain angels. Now, that's not going to be very likely to happen if we're only entertaining the people that we're comfortable enough to be around in our pajamas, right? We pretty well know if those people are angels or not. So hospitality has to go outside just our inner circle, it seems, for something like this to even be possible. But the same word is involved here. Philonexia, be hospitable. That's what's translated here as entertain strangers. But another interesting component here, in each of these passages so far, there's been the simple instruction, be hospitable, entertain strangers, entertain others. But there's been a little bit something extra in each passage, right? Be given to hospitality. Be hospitable without grumbling. And in this verse as well, we have something additional that can be learned from the passage. It doesn't just say, entertain strangers, or be hospitable. It starts with the phrase in verse 2, do not forget. Do not forget to do this. Why? Why was the author of the book of Hebrews inspired to record that as part of the instruction? Could it be because this act of hospitality can become a dying art if we let it? can be something we push to the back burner and don't really consider as that big of a deal, something that can be easily forgotten in the midst of our busy lives. If we combine the three unique phrases that are tied to these three passages that are translated, you know, be hospitable or be given to hospitality, we have this cumulative admonition, if you'll allow me the poetic license to just combine the concepts and the instructions here. Cumulatively, we have this instruction or admonition. Don't forget to be given to hospitality without grumbling. Don't forget to be given to pursue, chase down hospitality without grumbling. And the intense or cumulative effect of those phrases is remember to pursue hospitality with a right attitude. Remember, make this an important part of our lives as Christians, to pursue, to chase down the opportunity for hospitality with a good attitude. Is hospitality just a lost art, a nice custom for bygone generations? Or should hospitality be a part of the lives of the disciples of Christ? Should hospitality be dead for Christians? Not according to God's inspired word. There's a connection in each of these passages, though, that we read over briefly. So I want to go back to each of these passages and point out that connection. We're just going to read these three verses again. Let's go back to Romans 12, verse 9. You see if you can draw out the connection, the context here. Romans 12, we began reading in verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another. And we'll drop down to verse 13. Distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Let's read the passage in 1 Peter 4 again. 1 Peter 4, verse 8. We're looking for the connection here. 1 Peter 4. We began in verse 7, I believe. Yes, 1 Peter 4, verse 7. But the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be serious and watchful in your prayers. And above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without grumbling. And again in Hebrews 13, verses 1 and 2. What's the connection in the context of all three of these instructions about hospitality? Hebrews 13, verse 1, let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Do you notice it? In the context of all three of these passages instructing us to be hospitable, brotherly love is mentioned. Love is mentioned. That's the connection between all three passages, telling us explicitly, clearly, this needs to be a part of our lives. Hospitality is an expression of brotherly love. Hospitality is an expression of brotherly love. And it's an expression that we cannot forget, allow to become obsolete, or chalk up as just a dying art among us. That's just not part of how we do things these days. It's something that has to be pursued with a right attitude. Why? So that we are putting forth an effort to show brotherly love to one another. In a sense, hospitality is a tool for us to show brotherly love. It's something tangible we can do to try to express brotherly love one to another. These Greek words translated hospitable or given to hospitality or entertain strangers also all have a connection in their root. The word philonexia, philoxenos, they both have the same root there, philo. Thayer's and Strong's both point out that connection, that they both come from the same root word. Strong's number G5384, philos. Philos. Well, what does that root word mean? According to Thayer's, again, that root word, philos, Definition number one is friend, or to be friendly to one, to wish him well. A friend, an associate, he who associates familiarly, wow, that's a tough word to say up here, familiarly with one, a companion. So at the root of this word that's connected to hospitality is being a friend, being friendly. The last definition there listed in Thayer's is interesting as well. Probably a message in itself, a sermonette, or perhaps even more. Definition 1D of Philos is one of the bridegroom's friends who on his behalf asked the hand of the bride and rendered him various services in closing the marriage and celebrating the nuptials. I mean, for someone to be involved in planning your marriage, that's a pretty close friendship, right? Philos, friend, or to be friendly to, an associate, a companion. So the etymology of the word that's translated be hospitable or be given to hospitality is related to being friendly, which I think leads to a good point or an important point about hospitality. It comes from Proverbs 18, verse 24, which says, a man that hath friends must show himself friendly. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. And there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. You know, it would be easy to view this topic from maybe a consumer mindset, you might say. It would be easy to view this topic from a pessimistic perspective, thinking things like, well, yeah, I haven't been invited to anyone's home in years. Or now that I think about it, there are always people going out together after services, and I never get invited. Those things may very well be true. And it can lead to hurt or loneliness. But our perspective as Christians would be off if we only looked at hospitality from the receiving end. And we strive to be self-reflective people, to search ourselves for the qualities that God wants us to develop. So if we're feeling a little isolated or left out at times, we'd be right to ask, have I myself been hospitable? Have I shown myself friendly? He who has a friend must show himself friendly. Or is my typical approach to kind of wait and see if someone else will extend an invitation and be a friend to me? We can all fall into those patterns at times. No doubt that hospitality comes more naturally for some than others. There are some people that it just seems like it's just second nature for them. They are truly given to hospitality. I believe it may even be a spiritual gift given by God to some in the church for the edification of the body. Some people just do it so naturally, supernaturally, it seems. It can also be a part of our culture or upbringing. That's certainly a contributing factor. There are some families that just seem like they were trained in hospitality, or some cultures where that's just the norm. I considered putting a picture up today, but I did not do that. Didn't want to add to Scott's tasks back there, and also wasn't exactly sure where the photo was. But this picture, if you could imagine it, would paint the scene of hospitality. It's a picture of Emily and I in Petra, off the beaten path, just wandering around in Petra with three other volunteers who were there with us at the time. And we're sitting under like a canopy-style tent around a campfire with a young lady and her two small children. And in this picture, we're all holding our little small cups of tea. And this little girl that must have been maybe 2 or 3 years old is sitting on my lap as if she'd known me for years. They weren't selling anything. They weren't promoting tourism. They weren't asking for a fee. It's just part of the Jordanian culture, something we learned from living over there for 11 months. It became pretty normal that if you got in a conversation with someone, they'd say, "You should come over for tea." And that's what happened as we're just wandering around Petra. One of the local women invited us under her tent with the very little that she seemed to have herself and shared it. And my point is just, sometimes it's just part of the way we're brought up. And it can become more natural for some than others if you had that experience. It becomes much more of a challenge if you grew up in a family or in a culture where that wasn't the norm. But regardless, it's a practice and a quality that God desires all of us to develop, whether it comes naturally or not, because it's an expression of brotherly love. But what about those legitimate reasons we talked about for not showing hospitality? Some of those legitimate reasons we mentioned at the beginning of the message, things like time, energy, distance from others, space to entertain. Well, first I'll just say, there is something unique and special about being in someone else's home that can build the bond of friendship with them at a deeper level. There's something about being in someone else's space that helps you to get to know them more intimately. I think some of the most obvious reasons are you see evidence of their style, their interests, based on what you see in their home. You see pictures of their family, and you begin to learn and ask questions. Okay, who's this? Now, how does this person fit into the family tree? How many children do you have? How many grandchildren? Becomes a conversation starter. And that creates the potential for greater connection and appreciation for one another. Does it take time and energy? Yeah, absolutely. Is life busy, busier than ever, perhaps? Yes. But we take time for the things that are important to us. We make time, somehow, for the things that we value, the things that we consider important enough. And while we've all probably enjoyed some very special evenings where a meal was meticulously thought out, the menu was planned to every detail, the home was cleaned to perfection, maybe where you were afraid to even touch anything because it was so spotless. But some of my favorite memories of hospitality extended to us have actually involved very little planning and preparation. One example that comes to mind, probably my favorite example of being on the receiving end of hospitality, was years ago, as a young married couple, before we had any children, Emily and I were just having a conversation with a couple 3 decades our senior after services one day, and everyone's starting to clean up and pack up, and just kind of out of the blue, after going and talking to her husband about it, this lady came over and she said to Emily and I, "We're enjoying talking to you. We don't want it to end. We have 4 frozen turkey burgers in the freezer and probably a bag of popcorn or something we can eat along with it. Do you want to come over?" And we said, "Sure." "Did we have comfortable clothes to change into?" "No." Was it this detailed menu that had cost them a huge amount of their family grocery budget in order to entertain others? No. But that act of hospitality has stuck with me as much or more than any fancy meal or big preparation involved in hosting, because it was an expression of brotherly love. And because they were comfortable enough with us to invite us over on the fly when it didn't have to be perfect. We knew in that act that they weren't trying to impress us. She was honest. "We can scrape something together. It's not going to be the best meal you ever had, but we'll get to be together." And that meant more than any fancy dish really did. So does extending hospitality, especially in our own homes, take time and energy? Absolutely. But is it worth it? That's the real question. Another one of those legitimate reasons is distance, proximity to one another. Are we more spread out than in decades past when there were so many more brethren who lived in a small radius of one another? Yes, absolutely. But we also live in an age where hopping in the car to drive 30 or 40 or even 60 minutes away happens pretty regularly and pretty easily compared to generations past. And we do those things pretty often when we deem whatever the task is or the opportunity is as worthy of the effort, right? Has this obstacle of distance really proven to be a deterrent to hospitality in reality? Or is it just a barrier that we kind of build up in our minds? Well, you know, no one's going to want to drive all the way over to our place. Is that true? Occasionally it might be. But has it proven true in reality, or is it something we've just convinced ourselves of in our minds? That no one's going to value spending time with me enough to drive all the way over to our place. How about space? Do you have the type of space needed for hospitality? Well, it really depends on what your purpose behind the effort is. If you're worried about your home or possessions being compared to other people's, then the quality or the size of the space you have available can seem like an insurmountable blockade to hospitality. If you genuinely want to just extend brotherly love and spend time with others, then things like hardwood versus shag carpet, or vaulted ceilings versus being cozy around a card table, or serving filet mignon versus hamburger helper, don't really matter. If the goal is brotherly love and building those bonds, then these physical things don't really matter, or shouldn't. But even if some of these things, proximity, space, the time and effort involved to prepare your home, just seems like too much, does hospitality have to take place in your home? Not necessarily. Can have an even greater impact, I believe, if it does, for reasons already mentioned. But it's not the only option. A picnic at a park, an invitation for a meal out, whether that's at a restaurant or maybe between services on a holy day, you're invited to come eat at our table with us. That's hospitality. Or just asking someone to meet up for a cup of coffee. All of those things would still put the principle of hospitality into practice. And they don't have to take place inside your own home. Because these options still involve thinking ahead and putting forth the effort to entertain and include others. And in essence, this is what that effort really says. I want to invest in my relationship with you. I want to invest in our relationship. I want to voluntarily give of my time and spend it with you. That's brotherly love. Hospitality can take a lot of time, effort, and expense. Or it could be simple and on a tight budget, or with no budget at all. It only needs to be as complicated as we make it. But either way, it can be a very pleasant experience, and not only for those who are invited. Not even only a pleasant experience for those who do the inviting. Let's go to Hebrews 13, verse 16. Hebrews 13, verse 16. But do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. God himself is well pleased when we share with others. Well pleased when we put forth the effort to do good. And well pleased, as it's phrased here, with such sacrifices. I find that phrase profound and encouraging as well, because it tells us God recognizes that it's not always going to be an easy thing to do. It's not always going to be an easy thing to do good or to share. And I think that's as true of hospitality as it is of any other act of good works or brotherly love. It's not always easy. Yet, God is well pleased by the effort. The parable of the sheep and the goats in Matthew 25 comes to mind. It says, "Inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me." And one of the examples referenced there is, "I was a stranger and you took me in. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty, you gave me a drink." God takes those things personally, and he's well pleased by such sacrifices. You might be thinking at this point, okay, fine, I'll have you over, Mr. Smith. So I'm going to put my calendar over here on this. No, I'm just kidding. That's not the goal of this message. It's not the goal. Be happy to do that sometime, but it's not the goal. There's a principle that Christ actually taught us, though, that can help guide even our guest list when we're extending hospitality. Let's go to Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14. Luke 14 and verse 12 is where we'll start. Luke 14, verse 12. Now, to give you a little bit of the context, Jesus is saying this at someone else's home where he had been invited. Verse 12. Then he also said to him who invited him, "When you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, nor rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just." Interesting. I hesitated to even include this passage because I don't want anybody in here to be thinking now, if they get an invitation to someone else's home, "Oh, they must think I'm poor, blind, maimed, or just really lame." This is a pity invite. No, that's not the takeaway from this passage. The reason I wanted to turn here is to point out the principle that Christ illustrated, which is don't just extend hospitality where it's comfortable. Don't just extend hospitality within your closest circle. You know, it's natural that we all have certain circles in terms of our relationships, our human relationships. Some people that we consider friends, but some that we consider close friends, that we're just a little more comfortable around. Those would be those people we're comfortable being around in our pajamas. You don't have to try to be on. You don't have to try to impress anybody. It's good and natural to have these different circles and these different levels of intimacy in our relationships. I can say that because Jesus Christ did. He had many disciples. He had 70 disciples that he sent out at one point to heal, to cast out demons, etc. But he also had this special group of 12 disciples that he was working with on a more intimate level. And even closer, an even smaller circle from there, he had 3 disciples that he invited to special, unique situations. Peter, James, and John, who on several occasions, they were included when the whole group of 12 or the whole group of 70 wasn't necessarily included. That's good and that's right and that's healthy. We all need people that we can be close with and share with on a deeper level. We're not going to have that type of connection with every person. Christ isn't saying here, never hang out with that inner circle. Don't host them in your home. The point he's making is, don't allow those to be the only people you host in your home. The only people you extend a hand of fellowship to or show hospitality to. Every once in a while, with a desire to focus on hospitality and brotherly love, are we willing to stretch ourselves, bring someone in to our circle who we may not know quite as well? Are we willing to extend the hand of fellowship to those who may not reciprocate? Are we willing to be hospitable to those who are different from us in order to show that they still are of value to us? And do we consider who may really need this act of brotherly love to encourage them and benefit them? Something to think about. If you, like I do, recognize that there is some room for growth and hospitality in your life, what will we do from here? A goal goes a lot farther than a good intention. You know, we all hear messages from time to time that might convict us in the moment, but fade by Monday morning. And perhaps setting a specific goal could help. Some examples I want to share. By date, month, day, year, you fill in the blank. By this date, I'm going to host a meal or a watch party or a game night or a potluck in my home. Another example of a goal that can go farther than a good intention. Once a month, or once a quarter, once a calendar year, I will invite someone out for coffee or for an activity, perhaps just a walk in a scenic location. Invite someone out for window shopping. Invite someone out to play a sport or get some exercise together or go on a bike ride. And there are many different things that can fill in those blanks. Another example. Before the end of the school year, we'll invite someone to an activity in the area. For example, a free concert. We found some of those in the Pittsburgh area. Or a fair. Or maybe an activity that my kids are involved in. Like a game, a soccer game, a basketball game. Or a musical performance at their school, or a presentation, or their graduation. Think about how much that would mean to someone in the congregation to be invited along to something like that. Especially for people who may be feeling a little bit isolated, a little bit on their own. So when soccer starts back up in March or April, yep, every Sunday afternoon, you know where we'll be, the soccer fields in Claysville. So you're invited. We'll extend some further invitations, but seriously, it's a way to connect, to extend a hand of fellowship. No, it's not inviting someone to your home, but it's inviting them to be a part of your life. And examples like that don't even have to cost any money. Don't even take any extra preparation. It just takes the thought, the care to welcome someone else. The possibilities for these types of goals are endless, and they don't always need to require expense or a long period of time to prepare. But they are an investment in our relationships, and a specific goal can help us remember to be given to hospitality. Not to mention the variety of options available can make it easier to pick something that we can do without grumbling. So, brethren, hospitality does seem to be a dying art in our world, but that shouldn't be the case among those called out from it. It's not only a trait that God expects of elders or a few in the body that he may have supernaturally gifted with special skills and care to serve in this way. As members of the body of Christ, we should all strive to be people more and more given to hospitality without grumbling, without selfish ambitions or pride or desire for payback, but simply because we want to be more like our generous God who extends his loving care to us freely. So I hope you have a meaningful Thanksgiving this week and that you appreciate the hospitality you are shown or that you're able to show to others, perhaps even more this year than usual.